Welcome to 20 Minutes and Two Beers In. I'm Bobby.
I'm JD. We're doing it in this way.
We're doing it in reverse. I'm in control this time, JD.
You do. You got the control. We're connecting via Skype today, but we also connected via Skype line with someone pretty special today.
Yeah, pretty excited. We got to talk to Patrick Carey from the band Limbeck, one of my favorite bands ever. And I was super psyched to get to interview him, talk about the history of the band and what they're up to, which if you're a fan of the band, there's some pretty awesome stuff that he's filling us in on about what's coming up for Limbeck this maybe this next year.
And you got some inside stories in the industry, too.
We got some good stories. Jack Antonoff, the guitarist from Fun, and now he's got another band coming out called Bleachers. He just released a new single. Anyways, he was able to get a question to me to ask during the interview, so I got to ask Patrick that, which turned into a pretty good story about a beach. Just going to give you a little tease with that, JD. But this is season 4, episode 6, 162nd episode overall. And I got to ask you, JD,
yes,
what beer are you drinking for this episode?
Well, I had poker night. I got to christen my new poker table and chips. You were there. Actually, you won once, didn't you?
I came in second, got a silver medal.
You're number two.
Yes.
Number two.
Yeah. But I didn't spill anything on your brand new poker table.
No, Mike did, though. Mike did. But it was a good time. And whenever you host any party or any event, there's leftover beer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm drinking right now. Leffe is what it is called. It is a brown ale, Belgian ale, Abbey ale, it's called. But it's pretty good. Have not had it before, but I enjoy it.
I've got something from our good friends at Shiner, JD. It's the FM 966 Farmhouse Ale, made for spring. It's a springtime ale, JD. It's got Golding, Sterling, and Meriden hops for a sweet yet lightly spiced flavor. It's delicious, and with this warm weather we're having, JD, I'm enjoying it.
Nice, nice. Well, Shiner never goes wrong. Never go wrong with Shiner. So, but we've got to, we don't want to daunt or dilly-dally any longer.
That's
because
right.
We got some great stuff coming.
So we got the interview coming up with Patrick, and obviously after that, we've got a great six-pack of questions for each other. We've got the last call one stop away. JD, for anybody who's listening to us for the first time, you can follow us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle's 2beersin, the number 2beersin. And you can also email the podcast. Tell them how they can do that.
20minutes2beersin@gmail.com, no and on that, and you can follow us there. We also have a YouTube channel. We're on the Facebooks, the Google Pluses. We're everywhere
you want us to be. All right, when we come back.
Oh, wow, you've been watching a lot of Olympics.
I might have been. It's the only thing on right now. At night there's nothing new.
We'll tap into that in the six pack.
Yeah, okay, all right. When we come back, Patrick Carey from Limbeck. But before we get to him, you're going to get to hear the soothing sounds of Limbeck. This is Coming from Tucson.
It's a long, quiet drive when we take it at night. Back and forth again all night. It's been a long, long night. I'm still trying to figure out how she slept in my car again all night. Back in the back, everyone hit the sack with boxes to the ceiling. We're working. Took it.
Talking with Patrick Carey from Limbeck. He's the guitarist, keyboard player, multi-instrumentalist, background vocals. He even drove the van a lot of the time. Limbeck, Patrick, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, yeah, thanks for having me, Bobby, for sure.
So you guys got started in the late 1990s, 99, or?
Yeah, I guess it would loosely be the late 90s. We went through a couple of, I wasn't in actually the original lineup of the band.
Yeah.
I came in shortly after we had a cassette demo that, was pretty, Lookout Records-ish, if you're familiar.
Okay.
I still actually love that. Just love that tape. I didn't play on it, but, yeah, Rob sang on that and played guitar. And then we had the same bass player, Justin, and then the same drummer from the first half of our band, Matt, and then we had a different guitar player.
Okay.
But then shortly after that, I was asked to join and play guitar as well. So, yeah, I think late 90s is
okay.
Pretty true.
Did you guys all meet in Orange County area, or how'd you guys get together?
Yeah, we did. It's that initial lineup of our band. Rob and I went to high school together, and then our rhythm section, Matt and Justin, went to high school together. And at the time, things have changed so much since then. I think that just the music scene in Orange County was a lot different than it is now. I remember going to three or four shows a week at that point.
Yeah.
So you kind of saw all the same usual characters going to the same shows. And I know that we'd all kind of met at like a, probably some Lookout Records D-type band show playing around, or maybe a local show or something. Because we live about 20 or so minutes. We grew up 20 minutes or so from the other half of the band, Rob and I.
Yeah.
So we probably met at shows, and then that's how Rob kind of got in with those dudes. And then at a certain point when they were looking for another guitar player, Rob remembered that we'd played guitar in a jokey high school band together. So,
okay.
He hit me up, yeah.
Were you in any other bands aside from your jokey high school band before Limbeck?
Not before Limbeck. Oh, actually, yeah, I was in some kind of, like, screamy hardcore band.
All right.
That was short-lived, too, but I guess worth mentioning.
And you guys get together, and the first release you guys do was this chapter is called Titles?
Yeah, as our the entity of our band. Well, actually, shoot. I think there's an EP that we did before that was self-released that we did. But let's call that the first real official release. The chapter self-titled. Yeah.
And I tried to find it. I think you can download it digitally online, but it was hard to find stuff from it. I was able to listen to one of the songs off that. Why Don't You Just Leave Already? I was able to listen to that one.
And yeah, what did you think?
It was good, man. It reminded me a lot of it reminded me of Incubus. That's what That's what I was thinking when I heard it. That's kind of the sound. So very different from where you guys eventually went to, but it was a good sound.
Yeah, it was okay. I appreciate that. I think, you know, going just growing up, I guess, with the same dude playing in the same band, you kind of figure out what you're comfortable with and what you're like somewhat decent at. And I think we were definitely like sounding more like the records that were influencing us and trying to find our own thing at that point, I think.
Yeah.
It's safe to say. So, I mean, we went out to Kansas and made that record with Ed Rose, which we've done a couple of other of our records with. So, I think he really helped us, hone our sound even more at that point. I mean, I think we were probably way more of a wreck than we actually sounded like at that point. But yeah, I mean, it's a step in the evolution, you know?
Sure. And how did you guys put that album out? Cause you weren't with Doghouse at the time, right?
No, that was another little, just some friends locally, that were trying to put together a label. I think we might've been their only release officially.
Okay.
But, part of the reason why that record's so hard to find is our pressing, the initial pressing. They had a pretty good distribution deal hooked up, but the first pressing had like a skip in the audio. So they tried to recall it, and it just was a total disaster.
It's a bad start.
Yeah.
And so did you guys tour pretty significantly for that one?
We did. We were, I mean, it was very early in our touring history. We tried really hard to tour.
Yeah.
Where it was, things were just really thrown together, self-booked. There used to be, are you familiar with Maximum Rock and Roll magazine?
Yeah.
Yeah. They used to do a booking guide that you could help book yourself and get music contacts across the country. And that was one of our go-to devices for booking shows. It's amazing that it worked, because that was kind of pre-internet. So
sure.
You'd look for a listing in the city that you wanted to play. And, I guess people that were doing shows would list the kinds of bands that they work with or have booked shows with.
Mm-hmm.
So we would look for somebody familiar and then send them a tape, I guess, through the mail, and then hopefully they get back to us and call us and say, yeah, we can do a show or whatever. I mean, I know there were a whole bunch of shows that got canceled because that was never that good of a system. But,
yeah, I can imagine.
At least we were trying.
Sure. Yeah. And then you guys, your sound changes, you guys evolve. And what happens is Hi, Everything's Great, which is just, from beginning to end, just a phenomenal album.
Oh, thanks, man.
Did you know, I mean, when you guys were recording that album, did you kind of have a vibe while you guys were doing it? Like, hey, this is really good. Or what kind of feeling do you remember? I know it was a long time ago, but.
Yeah, no, I think it, I remember feeling really good about it. It felt really comfortable, probably for the first time, as far as us playing together, like things just came together, you know, better than they had in the past. So it felt really good. I think we were just kind of winging it though, as far as in the studio, just trying to make some kind of cohesive thing that was, in line with our influences, but trying to move somewhere where it was kind of like a hybrid of where, what we were into, which was kind of more stuff, but kind of more, I mean, I don't know, more like Lookout Records-y kind of like power poppy kind of way, but then mixed with some like twangy, more folky kind of influences.
Sure.
So yeah, I mean, the answer to your question is yes, it felt pretty cool when we were making that record.
Did you guys go into the studio with those songs already with an idea of those songs, or did everything come up in the studio?
Yeah, we demoed quite a bit of those songs. They were definitely a lot more crude versions of them with certain parts different and whatever, definitely demos. But we did demo a bunch of those, and I think maybe one or two of them might have come in last minute, you know, like in the studio. But for the most part, I think we worked out most of the songs prior. Okay. Yeah.
And that was your first release with Doghouse, right?
It was, yeah.
How did you guys get lined up with them?
That was a pre-internet tale as well. That was we would scour all of our favorite music magazines. They're kind of more like indie kind of punk magazines,
sure,
where people had to advertise their mail order catalogs and all that kind of stuff. So
we
there was, you know, a handful of labels that we were definitely familiar with just through bands that we liked. I mean, we loved Hot Water Music and Get Up Kids, mm-hmm, from Doghouse, so they were definitely a label on our mind. But we just basically made a demo. Actually, we drove out to Kansas to make the demo too. We did three songs out there, that two of which I think ended up on, we re-recorded for High Everything Straight, but two of them we demoed out there. And then we just sent that CD around with some, I think we screen printed some cool posters, and then sent a picture and sent those out to all the labels we were interested in. And we got a few decline letters, and then Doghouse was really cool, and they were into what we had sent out. And I know shortly after that, I think they came out to L.A. They were based in Toledo at the time, Toledo, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And then they came out to catch a show. And then we went out to eat and talked record deal.
Wow.
Yeah, it was cool.
That had to have been a surreal moment.
It was really awesome. Yeah, it was really, really weird to... I mean, things kind of went pretty fast with them, too, in a really good way. I don't mean that weird. It's just... it was like... They came out and things sounded good. So then they were like, we'll work on some kind of contract. And then they came out again. And then next thing you know, we were making a record and they were talking about throwing us on tours and stuff. So it was pretty cool.
Nice. And then,
yeah.
So you guys go on tour again. I think with this album, you guys are able to really cultivate a pretty nice following at this point.
Yeah, we toured that record a lot. I think we might have even toured it for close to 2 years, I think.
Wow.
It was a lot of touring. They just kind of lined up. Like, we'd made friends with bands like Motion City Soundtrack, and we did a couple tours with them, and then Doghouse hooked us up with the All American Rejects, who were just kind of, like, hitting radio and stuff. So we did a couple of their tours, which was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, for us, that was just a crazy jump in size of venues and crowd size.
Crowd size,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think we got more off track from them, but at the time, like, we felt really different from them musically.
Sure.
But I think when we were on that tour, we knew that we were a little bit of a musical sore thumb, but it was cool. Their audiences were way more receptive than I think we could have ever imagined, so... it was good to get out on those tours with them. The Doghouse helped out with, and then we became really good friends with them and went overseas a little bit. So yeah, it was good.
And after touring for about 2 years, you guys were able to get back to the studio and start working on Let Me Come Home. That was your third album.
Yeah, we kind of put that one off. I mean, we were just so comfortable with touring that we just kind of, like, I don't know, we wrote a couple of songs, and then just kind of we're like, oh man, we should probably make another record because we've been touring this one for so long. So that one was different. We only had about half of the song, which we demoed out in Nashville with a friend of ours. And then we hooked up with Gary Louris and this guy Ed Ackerson in Minneapolis. And then they helped us a huge amount on the writing of that record.
Okay. So in that one, primarily, you're going into the studio. You have, is it the same thing? You kind of have some rough sketches of what you want to do, but most of the work got done in studio?
Yeah, I mean, that one we had maybe half the record, so way less than Everything Straight. But it was cool. We demoed those songs that we had, which I think were about 5 songs that I think we have on our, that we have those demos on our Bandcamp site.
Okay.
But we demoed those and sent those out to Gary and Ed, and they made some awesome song notes for us, which I wish I could. I mean, maybe I should ask for their permission to post. They're super rad. They basically played back our songs to us with some chord changes and some melody changes, and those demos are just crazy. Just for me, being such a big fan of Gary's and the Jayhawks, like, it was cool to hear him singing our songs, basically. So we did that, and then with those notes, we kind of hashed those out a little bit, and then when we got out to Minneapolis, we would basically come in. Well, we did those first few songs that we'd had hashed out, and then Rob and I would go in the studio in the morning, and we'd play around with the song idea of Rob's with Gary and Ed, and sit around for a while until we got to a decent place, and then we'd call the other dudes and try to record it. That record we tracked live primarily.
Okay.
So it was. I mean, in the past with Ed in Kansas, we'd do drums first,
sure,
or play together, get a scratch track, and then do drums and do everything later. But with the Let Me Come Home record, we did all of our basic tracking live to tape, and then just did a few overdubs here and there. So it was a little bit more minimal, but
yeah.
Fun process, yeah.
Well, let's listen real quick to one of the songs off that one. This one is called Sin City.
Then I went and took a drive to the desert, and I like this city now, sure in it. Sin City's not such a bad place to visit. I used to hate that city, never liked that place, it's true. But now I like Sin City, it's got you. I used to think nothing good came from your city, of another 7 days that we're missing. October, November, and on through the new year. And 1, 2, 3, 4 months more. I went, oh my Lord, oh my Lord. I went, oh my Lord. You went, oh my Lord. But now I like your city. Now you like my city too. I like Sin City, it's got you. I used to hate that city. No, I ain't gonna lie to you.
So when you're recording it with more of a live band sound to it, I guess, what is your thought process in the studio versus when you're just by yourself having to record it? Is there more pressure in the situation?
Oh, man. It's so nerve-wracking. Because you don't want to be the one that is the cause to do it again.
Yeah.
You know? So there is a lot of pressure. And, that's the cool thing. I think we were so hung up on at the time. Which proved to be frustrating in some counts, but others it was kind of magical, where we were really tuned in to records that were done live, and kind of just that old way of thinking where your magic is in your mess ups and your mistakes. So I think that we were, I don't know, just kind of let it happen at that point, you know. And there's this song called Watching the Moonrise Over Town, where we had just learned that song and kind of got into the groove that we were going to play with on the song. And then I know we got to the bridge, and Justin, just our bass player, just kind of just totally spaced out on the what we were doing, and he drops out of the song completely. And then at the point where he figured out where he was, it's just like, it's one of the, for me, it's like one of those magical moments that we hope for. But you can't, I mean, you can't force those, you know. You can't be like, oh, I'm gonna mess up here and let's keep it. But that, in that circumstance, it was like, we listened back and we were like, oh my gosh, this is so perfect. And it was awesome. So, and then I remember there's another one, the song Names for Dogs, where Rob and I did that one together live, and man, we played that for like, it was just him and I playing acoustic guitars and singing, and it took us like 6 hours, no joke. It was so crazy.
Yeah.
For like a 3-minute song, it took us so long. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's, we were really hung up on that style of recording and, and what it, just kind of, yeah, throwing that twist on the process. So, I think we learned a lot, and it was good.
Then you hit the van again for more touring again.
Yeah.
And I think that was about the time when I first saw you guys. I think I saw you guys in Chicago. I think the first time I saw you, you were with Lucero, I think, was the first time you guys.
Oh, and that was like the last show of the tour, right?
I think so, yeah.
The crazy night with Silly String and...
Yep, absolutely.
Do you remember that at all?
It was, it was a phenomenal... Well, I mean, obviously, after that, I was hooked on you guys. Such a great show that was. But you guys tour, how much touring did you guys do for that one? A lot more than Hi, Everything's Great, or about the same?
I think about the same. I think we had, I think that tour was our first tour with our new drummer too, John, who's from Milwaukee. We'd always played Milwaukee and played with one of his bands called The Obsolete. And we're just like really good friends, kind of like, you know, we would be best friends if we lived in the same state.
Yeah.
It was really cool meeting him. And then it came where Matt, our previous drummer, left the band, and we immediately thought of him and called him up. And that was right before that Lucero tour started. We called him up and said, hey, what do you think about flying out? That we were in New York, like we had a week downtime. They were like, what do you think about flying out to New York and joining the band? And he's like, yeah, man. So he flew out with all drums, and we had one day of practice. And then we drove down to Atlanta and started that tour, and it was so fun because Lucero is a blast to be on tour with and to watch every night and hang out with. So it was a good time for us.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then you guys go back to the studio and you work on the self-titled album. Although it was close to a band name change. Is that true, or was that more of you putting one over some people that were interviewing you with changing the name to the Bears?
That was true. I mean, it was a lot of high hope. But I think I don't think that we, you know, you always overthink things. We thought that we were just kind of like, maybe this was like earlier thoughts, but we were always like, man, we have John in our band now. Like we should, and we kind of were so amped on his playing, especially with because we had just put out, I'm pretty sure we just put out the Let Me Come Home record.
Okay.
So we were just like, man, we're just all amped up. We should change our band name, re-record Let Me Come Home and start fresh. You know what I mean? And it was a lot of talk, but it was fun to think about that, and and then that's where we got all obsessed with Bears at that point, because we were going to call the band the Bears, and then yeah, so the record became self-titled, but it had a bear on the front, and we kind of like unofficially call it the Bear, the album.
And what was the process like for recording that album?
Well, that one was a fun one too. We went back to Ed in Kansas, and we wanted to have some more time to like really hash things out with that one. So we scheduled a month of recording, and then we took a break and went to Australia, and then we came back to finish up. So we had, I think we had most of the record recorded before we left for Australia, at least as far as the rough basic tracks go. And then the second half was like really messing around and getting weird with it.
Okay, and then you guys went to Australia?
Yeah, we went. That was our second tour to Australia, I think, at that point.
Okay.
I think. Yeah. Or no, maybe that was, no, I'm sorry. That was our first tour to Australia, and that was a long one. And then we made the record, and then I think we went back to Australia shortly after that, too.
Who had the idea of, let's take this sound to Australia?
It was this label, I believe. Man, I don't know if I remember the facts correctly, but I think it was a label. But now that I'm thinking about it out loud, it might have been our manager, who was buddies with another guy down there who was working with a band that kind of sounded like Foo Fighters,
okay.
And they did really well down there. They're called Kiss Chasey, and they had us down for a big like 3-week run in Australia, which in Australian terms is like a huge, huge long tour because there's only so many places that you can actually play in Australia.
Sure. Yeah.
So we were on this huge tour of Australia, which was awesome. And then the second time down, we met another guy on our first trip, but then his label released our self-titled record down there. So we went down to tour that for like about 10 days.
Okay. Very cool.
Yeah.
And you guys also did a tour, I think with this record, you guys did a tour with The Format and Steel Train, is that right?
Probably. We did a lot of tours with those guys. That might have been the last Format tour.
Okay. I think it was. Because that was the show, you guys would come out at the end, and at least in Chicago, you guys played the Vic. And you guys all came out and did Caravan, which was phenomenal because that's my favorite Van Morrison song.
Oh, radical.
But actually, I asked Jack Antonoff if he had any questions for you for this interview. And he said he wanted to know if you remember the time you guys got the van and trailer stuck on the beach and it almost washed away.
Of course.
Care to share this story with us?
Oh, yeah. That was an amazing one. That was a little bit earlier in our timeline, with our previous drummer, Matt. And, I think we just had our normal van with no trailer, but Steel Train was rolling with the same old big, 15 passenger van and a big trailer. And, we always, for some reason, we got friendly with this little town called Donna, Texas. It's like in the southern tip of Texas.
Okay.
And we would play shows there that were actually really awesome. And and it's not too far from South Padre Island, which is, I wasn't super familiar with it at the time, but it's a total spring break destination.
Okay.
It's a wild place, but we went there off season. But in California, you can't really just go drive your car on the beach. You have to park in the parking lot, but there you can pull your car on the beach. So, I think, we all pulled down and then for some reason I remember this distinctly that our drummer Matt was like, oh yeah, yeah, it's all good. You can totally pull your car and your van and your trailer down on the sand. And then they pulled in. I mean, they weren't like totally in the water, but they were maybe like 10 feet away from the water.
Right.
And then sure enough, they got stuck. And then we all started freaking out because I feel like the tide was coming in and getting higher. So we were like, oh my gosh, how are we going to get all this equipment out of the sand and not have it washed away?
Yeah.
So, this guy with like a crazy dune buggy came up and, had like a tow line and he tried to tow the van out, but the tow line snapped, which was crazy. So then we got even more nervous. And then another guy with a big pickup, he was smart and was like, take your trailer off and I will pull the trailer first and then I'll pull your van.
There you go.
But I remember him also distinctly pulling the trailer out and just like flooring it, and then we were so nervous that, like, the trailer was just flying over these mounds of sand on the beach, and I was sure all their guitars would be broken, but fortunately nothing broke.
It all worked out in the end then, huh?
Yeah, it did. And then we went out to dinner, and it was awesome.
And then, you guys go on tour, and then after that, do you guys take a break at that point, or how did it, because you guys never really gave any word about what was going on, like, with the
band. Yeah, I don't know. I think, we did a good amount of touring on that record,
mm-hmm.
I remember, like, kind of the whole music world kind of falling apart around us, we felt like, because we were doing the same tours and just everything was hard. It was like we were playing places that we did really well at and there wouldn't be as many people at the show and like we wouldn't sell as many records or shirts or stuff, you know, like, and I think it was due in part to, I think that was kind of like the peak of the recession and
mm-hmm.
gas prices were crazy and just, it was just such a weird time. So I think we all were just kind of like, maybe we need to slow down a little bit and mm-hmm. just kind of figure out a better attack. And I know we did some weird regional stuff at that point, and then it just kind of like almost slowed down to a stop, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you guys were in such an interesting time in music, because when you guys started, you know, the whole idea was getting a big record contract, because that was, everybody wanted to put out and sell like 10 million albums, because that's what everybody, right. You know, that's what the big albums were
right.
doing. And
mm-hmm.
then, you know, in later on in like 2007, it was, hey, if you can sell, you know, and nowadays, if you can sell 50,000 albums, that's a big success. But,
oh yeah,
you know, it's such a change. And you guys went through the rise of Napster, the rise of iTunes, the switch of formats from CD to digital. And it was a lot
yeah.
of stuff that you guys went through.
Yeah, man. It's a total trip.
And so you guys take a little bit of a break. You guys do your own things. And you guys come back. You guys release the two singles the Already Gone in 2012.
Oh, yeah.
And you guys did a couple.
That was more of like a, I mean, it was definitely like later, but I think both of those songs were recorded during the self-titled album recording.
Okay. Yeah.
And we finished them up. We didn't like totally redo anything or anything, but just laid a couple extra tracks on top of them.
Okay.
I think that was just out of like, we hadn't seen each other. Well, yeah, because Justin's not in California anymore, and John's always been in Milwaukee. So
yeah,
it was a good reason for us all to get together because we hadn't done that in so long. So it was fun to have to put a release together and then do a quick little tour.
Okay.
For that one, yeah.
So what's everybody up to these days?
Everybody's still spread out. I mean, I'm in Southern California, working as a graphic designer and, having a bunch. I have two kids and another on the way now.
Oh, wow.
Crazy.
Congrats.
Yeah. Thanks, man. And then, Rob's close by here. He's doing, some computer back-endy crazy computer job.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a kid on the way. That's crazy. And then, Justin's out in Arizona. He moved out to Phoenix. Kind of right near our last couple tours.
Mm-hmm.
And he's out there, and then John's still out in Milwaukee, and he's got a great record label now called Goodland Records.
Okay.
And touring with a couple bands too, I think.
Nice.
Yeah. And then Rob and I have a band that we do
the Young Dudes,
the time.
Right?
Yeah, the Young Dudes.
Very cool. Yeah, I'm still hoping that you guys can put together a tour so I can see you again in Chicago. I know you guys play out in California.
Yeah.
But us Midwest fans, we're hoping one day we'll get to see you guys
yeah.
again.
Yeah. Well, that's what I hope it happens. We've been talking to John and he's like, yeah, we should do a Midwestern little pivot tour, you know, like come into Milwaukee and kind of do do a few dates around there, which Chicago would for sure be part of.
Absolutely.
But that would be like a Limbeck tour, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay. It's funny. I mean, you know, again, like a sign of the times, it's like we're getting together digitally right now to do a cover for a comp. It's like a vinyl comp.
Okay.
For a record label, and I don't know if it's like public knowledge yet, but it's going to be really cool.
You can make it public right now if you want.
Yeah, I mean, why not? I would hope that it's all on track to happen, but we're doing an old 97 cover.
Okay.
For a comp, and then
what song are you guys
it's
doing?
Cool. We're doing one called Sound of Running. It's,
okay.
It's like a super early track from them, and actually, it's like a Murray song. Are you familiar with Old 97?
I am. I'm a big fan. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah, it's a Murray song, so it's
okay.
Pretty rad.
Awesome.
And yeah, but like we're you know we were deciding which track we were gonna do, and Rob and I kind of just chatted about it, and then he recorded his little scratch track, and then we sent it to John, and he put drums on it, and now he's going back around with everybody else. So we kind of just had that reminder that technology is pretty awesome, and who knows? We might throw together another like little 7-inch or something that's more current.
Yeah.
Just because we can.
Yeah, it's cool that you know that's what you're able to do nowadays. You guys don't have to be even in the same cities. You guys can record.
Yeah, it's crazy. I play in another band these days too. It's called The Pride of Your EPA. That's it's with a couple other guys. You may or may not know. There's the drummer that used to be the drummer of Motion City Soundtrack, Tony.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
He plays drums, and then a guy named Bill McShane, who used to play in a band from Kansas called Ultimate Fakebook.
Okay. And what's that band's name again?
It's called the Pride of Your EPA.
Okay.
And we did our record like that, too. We just kind of sent the tracks around the internet, and it was awesome.
I bet, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, awesome, man. Parting shot before you go. You know, I know you were the driver for everywhere, so you probably got you drove all over the place. So you probably got to be the guy that picked out what food you guys were eating. And I know you're a big fan of Mexican food.
Yeah.
So I want to know what's the best fast food taco chain out there.
Oh, fast food Taco Cabana.
All right.
Taco Cabana out of Texas. Well,
yeah.
I mean, I'm a little partial to Del Taco that's out here.
Okay.
Just because that's my hometown favorite, but when I don't have that, I think it's got to be
Taco Cabana.
Taco Cabana. Yeah.
I think there's a lot of people in Texas that agree with you.
That's good. They got beer there.
Ah, hey, beer and fast food tacos—you cannot go wrong with that.
Exactly.
Awesome. Well, Patrick, thanks for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. You can get Limbeck stuff. They have stuff on iTunes. You can also get it from limbeck.bandcamp.com. There's a ton of great demos and B-sides you can get off that and some live stuff. So yeah, Patrick, thanks a lot. We'll
thank you.
Hope to talk to you again sometime.
Sounds good, Bob.
All right, Bobby, time for our six-pack of questions, and I'm going to start us off, but I can't start us off without music, and we're going to start that now. Oh, you know, when we're Skyping, it's never quite on at the same time, even though we're pointing at each other going, yeah. We try.
It happens.
Yeah. Bobby, the social media, we're all over it here at 20 Minutes and Two Beers In. But one person who's not all over it, Rick Pitino.
Yeah, I saw that, his recent comments about Twitter.
Not a fan. He feels like it's a distraction for his team. He doesn't even let them have cell phones here and there. Is he losing touch with the current athlete?
No, he's being a coach. I mean, if you're a coach, you fear social media, I think, because that's another thing that can get your players into trouble. And your job as a coach is to keep your guys out of trouble.
But it's a way these kids communicate now.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's how they keep in touch with everyone. You know, they'll sit next to each other and, you know, text each other. And now, you're taking away their phones, taking away, social media. Is he getting too out of touch?
I don't think so. I don't think he's going to lose any recruits because he makes fun of Twitter or rags on Twitter. And there's no college kid that's going to give up their cell phone in order to play with him. So I think that'll work itself out.
All right.
JD, Kevin Love came out and was talking about the T-Wolves, the contract situation. He said, hey, you know what? I'm not here to bag on the Lakers, but I think we've got a better core with the Wolves.
Yeah.
That's an interesting little hint there. But still, if you're Kevin Love, and I want you to take your bias out of this, I know it's going to be so difficult for you to take your Minnesota bias out of it. But if you're Kevin Love and you can sign anywhere in the NBA, where's the best location for him? And if you say Minnesota, I don't think that's a valid answer.
That's tough. After this season,
mm-hmm.
San Antonio may need him. That I think that could be a decent landing spot for him.
Yeah.
San Antonio's obviously getting older, but they've got some young talent that's really building him. Obviously, I want him to stay in Minnesota. But I think San Antonio's one place where he really could go. Depends on how much money he wants.
There you go. That's true.
If he wants top dollar, he's going to stay smaller market. But there's going to be things happening down in Miami.
Yeah.
And top players want to play with top players. So that wouldn't shock me if some things happen down there that open up for him. Because I don't think D-Wade's going to be there next year.
Yeah.
So anyway.
All right.
That's my answer. Bobby, the Olympics cost $51 billion. $41 billion over budget. It's more than any other Olympics combined. It was $11 billion budgeted, I believe, and it was $40 billion over. All right.
Has that budgeted the Olympics, has he been located? Is he alive? Is he with Bob Costas right now? Or
I heard on another podcast that they had to build this road, build the infrastructure for this. And the road cost $9 billion, right? Which was more than the Vancouver Games as a whole.
Wow.
For this road. So a lot of corruption there, too. But anyway,
yeah.
So $51 billion for the Olympics. Bob Costas with his quote-unquote pink eye, or is it Botox reaction? We don't know.
Who knows?
Or I'm giving you the option of these three things. $51 billion, Bob Costas' eyes, or actual performances at the Olympics. What's going to be remembered most coming out of these Winter Games?
There's been some pretty good performances. I think the athletes' performances is what's going to be remembered. I think that Bob Costas' eye will forever live in infamy. I'm pretty sure there's a Twitter account based on it. And I think that'll always... And he will be razzed when he gets back, for sure, in interviews. But no, the athletes' performances. It's the Olympics. That's what people always... Nobody ever talks about any other circumstances unless there's tragedy, which there hasn't been, and I hope there won't be. Nobody talks about anything else other than Olympic performances years down the road.
Yep.
I don't know if you noticed this or not, JD, but Ricky Gervais let everybody know on Twitter that there's going to be some more David Brent musical sightings. Do you remember we talked about this maybe a year ago where he did learn guitar with David Brent?
Some
videos. Well, now they're putting together a David Brent band, and they're going to be doing shows.
Huh.
Yeah. My question is, with the American version, Michael Scott, what would you like to see Michael Scott do? It's been a long time since we've heard from Michael Scott.
It has been a long time since we've heard from Michael Scott. I think he'll do something musical. I think he'll be playing the drums with the Blue Man Group. Because remember, he came back from his trip with a bongo drum, I believe. And so that's what he's going to do. Michael Scott is going to be the fourth Blue Man.
Oh, boy. All right.
Indiana-Iowa basketball. Always looking forward to that. Well, this year, game got postponed because a steel beam fell from the ceiling in Indiana, smashing some seats. If people would have been sitting there, they would have been dead.
But nobody was there.
No, exactly right.
All right.
Is it time for a new arena in Indiana?
No. No, Assembly Hall.
A beam fell from the ceiling.
The roof at Assembly Hall was recently replaced just a couple of years ago, and they said it was purely because of a freak circumstance of how the snow had collected on the roof of the stadium, and it was not a load-bearing beam. It was a beam that was there for...
I don't care if it's load-bearing or not.
Cosmetic purposes or not.
That would have turned somebody into a pancake.
That would have been Bad News Bears. Absolutely.
Splat.
But just because
Glad you got those seats.
Well, fart noise? Glad you got those seats. Fart noise? Is that?
You know me. I'm not good with sound effects.
This is
going to
be the end. Make sure we write this time down because this is going to be the tag on the end of this episode. No, the Assembly Hall is... there's nothing wrong with it. It's a great stadium. One of the best venues in the Big Ten to see a basketball game. No reason to change it. It's not like it's the Metrodome or anything.
It's appearing like the Metrodome. Well, snow causing an issue.
Snow makes a problem with it.
Yeah.
JD, last question for you. I put this to Patrick in our interview. Now I'm going to put it to you. What is the best fast food taco? Or best fast food taco chain, I should say.
Oh, Taco John's, hands down.
Taco John's.
Yeah, I like their potato in a pound.
Potato Olays, and the potato Olays Bravo, which is with the cheese and all that good stuff on it.
That is delightful. I love their loaded burrito that has potato Olays in the burrito. but yeah, I'm just a huge potato Olays fan, so that hands down.
So regional taco joints, because he went Taco Cabana in Texas, and you're going Taco John's, which is a southern taco chain, and right?
Yeah, I don't know. I had it growing up in Iowa.
Hey, all right. I know, it's in Indiana.
So if it made it up there, so that's what I'm going with. Hey, Bobby, before we drop off and go to our last call one stop away, I do have to read from the Beer Devotional.
Oh,
we usually do this at the top of the show, but we'll do this now. It is the Upland Brewing Company's wheat for this week. The quote is from Anonymous.
Did you say Upland?
Upland, yep.
Yeah, that's an Indiana beer.
It's Bloomington, Indiana. I thought you'd appreciate that.
Absolutely.
The quote is, "Drinking wine before beer is a no-no, dear. Topping beer off with wine, that's fine." Interesting.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Don't know if I'd
But this is what they're talking about is their whip beer, their wheat. And they say it smells like baked wheat bread, yeast, and banana. Now, I picked this one out for you, Bob, because of Bloomington, but the food pairing with this, skewers of grilled cherry tomatoes sprinkled lightly with fleur de sel. Is that how you would drink your Upland Brewing?
No. I would drink my Upland beer. They have a great brew pub in Bloomington. With some barbecue, because they have some great barbecue there. So I would have my Upland wheat with a pulled pork sandwich, JD. That's what I would be doing right now.
Excellent. Excellent.
All right, when we come back, last call, one stop away.
Closing time.
open all the doors and let you out into the world.
JD, it's time for the last call, One Stop Away. I got some creepy stuff for you from England.
Okay. Now, is this like from the you know, the Tower of London?
This could have been something that was performed in the Tower of London, JD.
Ooh, yeah. All right.
Now, I don't know how experienced you are with scorned lovers. Now, the phrase is, hell hath no fury like...
Yes, a scorned lover.
There you go. This scorned woman had a tattoo of her boyfriend on her arm. And
Okay, never do that.
She had the tattoo of her brother... Her brother.
That
would have been a different story, JD.
The story took a wicked turn. No.
It's her boyfriend. Her boyfriend of 2 years, his name was Chopper.
Of course it was.
He pretended to move to Alaska, but had actually moved in with a woman he'd been having an affair with. So when she found out, she had Chopper's B tattooed on her arm. I won't add the last of the B, but you understand what I'm saying.
Yes.
I'm saying she's his girl. So anyways, she found out that he'd been cheating on her, so she used a scalpel, cut the tattoo, the skin off, and placed it into a jar with a bunch of vampire teeth, so her dead skin is in this jar. And she sent it to him.
Oh!
And she posted it also on her.
Oh!
On her web, on her her social media site, but she sent it to him in the mail with vampire teeth.
And then, I mean, she had to find vampires, pull their teeth. I mean, that's part of the work, right there.
Yeah, and she's posted a picture of her arm, what it looks like now. If you're in England and you see a woman with this arm
mangled,
that is, don't ask what, you know, hey, what happened? How did you get this? Just run, okay? Don't ask about the arm. Just assume the worst. Get out of there now.
Oh, I'm almost a little nauseous thinking about that. That's brutal. Well, Bobby, mine's from Lago Vista, Texas. And a Texas detective is in hot water. He was arrested, charged with assault last month, after he allegedly kicked a coworker in the back, hit him on the head with a notebook, and the kicker, he farted in his face.
Oh, wow.
Dispatcher Donald Barner alleges that Lago Vista Police Detective Lawrence Jonap kicked him in the back, causing him to lunge forward. After turning around and seeing Jonap laughing, Foreigner reported the incident to his superiors. Now, the victim described the pain as a 7 on a scale of 10, with 1 being the weakest, 10 being the strongest. Now, the next day, Varner was sitting at his desk when Jonah struck him over the head with a notebook, flicked him on the ear, and then, quote-unquote, passed gas in Varner's face. I shouldn't laugh. No, I should, actually.
Yeah, you should.
Reserve officer told the sheriff's deputy that she witnessed Jonah tap Varner with the folder and ask, "How's your back?" She also admitted she saw Jonah pass gas in front of Varner's face. Now, Jonah claimed he only nudged Varner. He was charged with assault with injury and is facing up to a year in jail, fined $4,000.
Wow.
Yeah. There's one. Clearly, this guy's a bully. Kicked him.
Mm-hmm.
Hit him. But then he's like, nope, we're going back to junior high.
I haven't gone far enough. But you know what? Now the listeners know why I'm not recording. I'm in the studio and you're
because
recording
from home.
Because
you've got
gas. I've expelled you from the studio to prevent further injury to myself. That's.
I thought it was because I kicked you in the back and hit you over the head with a notebook. But it was the gas all along.
I didn't know. There it is, buddy.
Well, it's been a fun podcast and a great interview.
Absolutely. Thank you so much to Patrick for his time. And we will see all you guys next week.
Splat.
But just because
glad you got those seats.